It's meant to happen. Yeah.
Okay, we're going to talk about honor. What is honor? What's the word for honor in Judaism?
Kavod.
What does kavod mean? What's the word for honor in Judaism?
Can it also mean grace?
What is kavod, the word for kavod? Kavod means from kaved, heavy. To give something weight means to honor it. Yeah? Yeah, make sense? How do you give things weight?
Can you repeat that question?
How do you give things weight?
What's important? Priority?
Emphasis on something? Or?
Attachment.
Okay.
Attention.
Attention. Okay. Alright. What should you give things honor? Should things. Does a person need to have honor?
To feel worthy. It depends if they want to feel worthy.
Does a person need to have weight?
I think so.
In what aspect of his life?
Social.
Okay.
Experience.
He needs to have weight in his experiences?
You said how does he get that honor on that weight?
Right.
He carries himself like with a certain gravity, as in like taking life seriously, monitoring his actions and things like that. Realizing the weight of his deeds.
Okay. So
something we were just told about. So like, love your fellow man like yourself, or love your friend like yourself. And like, you can't love somebody else if you don't love yourself first.
That's true.
So you kind of, if you don't think you have any weight, then it's
okay. That's true.
To
okay.
Have something
that Let me say that the mitzvah of v'ahavta rechamecha, to love the person as yourself. The Rambam says, how do you do that? You do it by lachus al mamono, to take care of his physical property, his physical needs. And to praise him with words. Obviously there's a lot of honor involved in loving. To praise a person, to see the good aspects. Now, you're saying, to love a person as yourself, if you don't see the good in yourself, it'll be hard for you to see the good in others. You understand what I'm saying? Okay, now let's go. Let's see what Revolvi has to say about these questions. So he has a... Rav, you know who Revolvi was? He was a very, very big mashgiach. Not so long ago, he was nifta. And he wrote a book called Alei Shul. And he has different things. He has classes on how to, first of all, to understand what this concept is, and how to achieve the concept in Jewish terms. So let's see. Olameinu hu olam ha'arachim. He says, our world is a world of arachim. You know what arachim is? Arachim means... values. People have value in this world. There's people who take the garbage. There's people who, you know, in America, who's the American footballer, right? There's the scientist. There's the first man who went to the moon, right? It's a world of arachim. We give those values to people. Some guy is a computer science. Some guy is an anthropologist. We call ourselves names. You understand what I'm saying? Some guy is a big business guy. Whatever it is. We label ourselves, and that label gives us a certain value. It's a world of arachim.
Does that mean value is synonymous with identity?
To identify with something. Now, if you identify with something which is valuable, then it's synonymous. If you identify with something which is not valuable, or even, you know... Even if it was valuable in the place that you're living, but it's not real value, then it won't be honor. What we have to do is we have to identify or give weight to those things which have real value. What has real value in man? That's what we're trying to really work out here. If we understand that question, right, who understands the question of honor. L'chol davar yesh erech. Everything has a value. Hamitbateh b'mechir shemishalmim avurov. The price you pay for it. Gam la'umnot ha'adam. Also the person's tasks, his work. Yesh erech. There is also value. Hamitbateh b'schar shemishalmim avura. The amount of money you pay for him. If he's a computer programmer, you pay him, I don't know, $10-$50 an hour. He's a very good computer programmer, $100 an hour, right? That's in the world. Or anthropologist, what was it you were studying?
Evolutionary anthropology.
Right, okay, so how much do you take an hour, right? Some people take a lot of money for an hour. Someone told me, I went to one big businessman and said, you know, this meeting's worth, this businessman, $40,000 an hour, right? Okay, look, I don't know, maybe he's just joking, but you know what I'm saying. I don't believe it, but okay. In theory, right? And you'll notice how people in the world treat it, because, you know, it's funny that you're in Manhattan, and I understand Manhattan's a place where there's not a lot of people, you know, but everything's tall there, and you live on the top floors, and you, right? It's like, it gives a certain erich to things. You know, when you go to the...
Erich?
Value to things. You go to visit someone on his 54th floor or whatever floor that is, right? You're high up there. Some guys want to be on the top floor. I don't know, you know, maybe after the Twin Towers people are so keen on being too high up, right? But okay, let's go weiter. Uman Ome, a professional, says, Chochmati ani mocherach, I'm selling to you my wisdom. And he's allowed to be derish, according to one sheet in Shulchan Aruch, he's allowed to ask for it whatever amount he thinks. Because it's not something that you can value. Generally speaking.
Wisdom?
Wisdom, yeah. Oh, an woman, a computer programmer, an anthropologist. You know, you want to ask my advice? I'll give you an answer, but it'll take me time. It's pay me $1 million. Can you measure it? It's his wisdom. He's who he is today. Because of that wisdom. You understand what I'm saying? It's not something you can measure. So it says, also a person, it's sad that he's a person, has erech, has value. What makes you as a person valuable? Is it your smile? Is it your nice shirt with the horse and the rider on it?
Your personality.
Okay, we get into that. Is it your, you know, the beautiful suntan you got? Right? You're in Bombay. Where is it? Hawaii, and you got this beautiful suntan. Right? What gives you your value? People spend a lot of money for some of these things, you know? Some people get these machines, they don't even go to Barbados, they can do it in New Manhattan, right? Or spend a tremendous amount of money on getting the hairstyle done. Or the manicure.
Knowledge or ability.
Okay.
Mastery.
Right.
Experience.
Okay. So you're all saying there's two aspects to man. There's the physical and the intellectual or spiritual aspect to man. Which is the most honorable aspect of man? Which aspect should he give weight to?
Spiritual.
The spiritual, the intellectual, which is the intellectual, right? That's what defines you. An honorable person, a person who has honor, he gives weight to that which is important. If you give weight to that which is unimportant, you are not honorable. You do not have honor. You understand what I'm saying? That means the world that we live in is not necessarily a world which has the right weight in what it gives honor to. If you're a big, tall guy that you can just reach the basket and go boom, right? You might be on every single TV show in America. And you might be worth people might pay millions. I don't know how much they pay now for anyone got more than a few million dollars for being a basketball player, a basketball. Yeah, oh yeah. That's how much. What sort of money we're talking about for basketball?
Tens of millions.
Okay, that's quite a lot of money, right? Just for being tall and the ability to go boom with a ball, right? Or if you're big, masculine, you know, heavy guy that you can like, you know, you bigger than a bull, right? You can be a few tens of millions also for footballers, right? Baseball apparently is a bit more of a skillful game, right? Maybe basketball is as well, I don't know. Maybe these are...
No,
but obviously...
Not as well paid, though. Not as well paid.
Not as well paid, okay? But you understand what I'm saying? Where you put your weight is where you put your honor. Are those the people you honor?
I have a question.
Yeah.
So, I agree with what you're saying, like if you put more of your weight into spiritual, intellectual, it's like more honorable. But just because I'm curious, like what's the mechanism you use to arrive at that conclusion? Like it could be argued that the physical, if you put more weight in the physical, you have more honor. Like, what's the mechanism? What's the thought process you use to go get?
Oh, how do I get there? You're asking. Okay.
Yeah.
Do you? First of all, I made an assumption. I made an assumption that there's a physical and a spiritual aspect to man. Correct? Okay. Is that assumption good enough, or you want to go before that assumption? We can go before that assumption. Do you want to start with that assumption, please? Or you want to go before that assumption?
Let's go before that.
Okay, let's go before that.
Okay,
let's start the basics. Okay. Man has an intellect. That's an assumption, or that's acceptable?
An intellect?
Intellect, hasn't it? Right? That's acceptable? Okay. And man has a physical part of him, right? Which he uses. His strength, he lifts up bars, right? He has muscles, right? Which aspect defines man better? Which aspect would you say, when I say defines man, I'll take, when I define something, I have to identify what's special about him, correct? That's what you're saying about identify beforehand. So when I identify man, I have to identify him as a species. I'll say there's a cat, there's a dog, there's a cow, right? And each species, I'll identify about something specific to him. Right? You know, a dog and a cow will say it's, you know, the cat's just that animal you have in the home to, you know, cuddle up to, or whatever they do in America, I don't know, or to dress it, right? Or if you don't have enough, you have enough patience for having children, so, you know, you talk to it, and it goes, yeah, whatever it does, and fine, right? And you celebrate its birthday, and all sorts of things, you buy it presents on the 25th of December, and all sorts of things you can do, right? And you do its hair nicely, right? Whatever. And you, I'm sure there's lots of cat stores in America, right? So that's the definition maybe of a cat, right? In America, right? I'm sure if you went to Taiwan, there'd be a different definition.
Or Jerusalem.
Or Jerusalem, yeah. Okay? But how about defining what a man is different from an animal? I mean, do you think a man is just another animal? I mean, he's obviously different.
Like if you were to define him physically, you could say an upright standing being.
Okay.
If that, I don't know. Like,
but that makes him special?
When you, yeah, the fact that he stands upright
on two legs.
On two legs, yeah, what makes special? Well, 1 second. Who can run quicker? a horse or a man?
Kangaroos.
Kangaroos, right, okay.
But the point is that man stands up on two legs, like fully upright.
Yeah, so what?
But that's what makes him special.
Yeah, it's something different. But when I say something identify with man, I'm saying something makes him special. Something makes him not just man has beards which he cuts off. Man, all sorts of things. That just makes man special. Man manicures his fingernails, right?
Man has intellect, like the curiosity to know more, and also
speech. Dolphins also talk to each other.
They communicate with each other. I don't know if they don't talk.
Maybe they do. How do you know? No.
I think communication is too. You communicate via like that's a thing, that's not talking.
Okay, you're right, you're right.
If they heard
but I don't want to go to Chumash. You're right in Chumash, but these guys want before Chumash. These guys don't want to... Chumash says what you're saying. Chumash says that what makes man different... And actually, this is many... A year or 2 years ago, I had a neuroscience... boy came from the STEP program, equivalent of your program here, in Machon Shoma. So his question was, he was interested in... Or in neuroscience, what's the difference between a machine and man? What defines? You know, you have artificial intelligence. What's the difference? So, look, it doesn't speak about artificial intelligence in the Gemara, right? Maybe it does, but in Chumash it's very simple. Rashi says in Chumash that man is different from the animal because he has yeter. Rashi has a kasha in Chumash. You learned Chumash Rashi, you guys? No. So in Bereishit it says vayipach ba'apav nishmet chayim, right? And it was a nefesh chayim, and man was a nefesh chayim. By the creation of animals, it also says nefesh chaya. So Rashi says, so what's nefesh chaya means? Man's nefesh chaya, soul of his life, is greater than that of the animal. Why is it greater? He has yeter deya v'dibu. He has more das and more dibu.
Right.
With speech. More das and more dibu. What does das mean? I mean, this is... Das. No, it doesn't mean wisdom. Das and Dibu. I'll explain to you what they are. Dibu, you understand. Dibu is speech. Now, it's brought in Midrashim that Adam Rishon spoke to the animals. So, you know, the animals you could talk to. He understood the animals, right? Probably that's where Dr. Doolittle came from, but I don't know. Maybe from Shlomo HaMelech, right? But, most of these stories come a little bit from Chazal. But okay. You understand? The story of the pauper, that's from Shlomo HaMelech. That's a midrash. Anyway, the king who became a pauper, the Shlomo HaMelech did that. He went into Anyway, the Bekitza. So, what does Deya mean? So we see, where do we see Deya the first time used in Chumash? So it says, Vayedat Chava Ishto, man knew his wife. Right? What does new mean? It means he had relations. What does relations mean? It says pru uruvu, to be fruitful and multiply. So das is to do with fruitful and multiply. What's physically to be fruitful and multiply means to take your essence, the DNA, take your essence, give it to someone in a giving way, be expressive of the essence in a creative way, and that person expresses that essence. So das is the ability to be creative in expressing your essence. Now I'm going to add something because of a different pasuk in Chumash, but it's the ability to express your essence in a creative way over obstacles. That's what das means. Man has a greater ability for that. That's what an artificial intelligence, a computer, won't be able to do that. He won't be able to work out new ways. He'll only be able to work out new ways as much as a man programs him. But he won't be able to be creative in working out new ways. You understand what I'm saying? He won't create... You won't have a computer to write a program to solve a problem that's encountered. Are you disagreeing?
Could create a machine that and build into it the ability to take in a problem of some type and be able to come up with solutions.
And come up with solutions.
Yeah.
And be creative with them?
Well, it depends how you define creative.
To come up with something that... I mean, when you're saying it's really the person who's being creative in that. The person put in a creative element. He wouldn't come up with something that the program wasn't... It wouldn't be come up with an idea that wasn't intrinsic into the program. He wouldn't come up with a new idea. He wouldn't think about general relativity or quantum mechanics. He wouldn't come up with an idea like that. You understand what I'm saying? He might be able to... Like, you might be able to train a computer that you have... Let's say you train him with a navigation system, right?
Exactly. So there are computers that can play chess better than the best human chess players. They come up with strategies that are beyond what the human has.
Because he has a larger memory, and he can go through there's certain rules, and he go into the future and say, if he does this and this, I can do this, and if he does this, this, and he can do that, right? So because there's rules and you can project in the future, so you can do that better than a human being. But can he compose a Beethoven? Can he, I mean, maybe there's rules, certain rules.
It's imaginable that a machine could be created that would eventually, that would be able to figure out something and compose music, you know, on that level. I can imagine that something like that. You could, you know, teach it music theory and build in randomness so that it discovers what sounds more musically pleasing to people. But yeah, I think there is, at its essence, a difference between what computers and people think.
Right. I mean, what you're doing is you're being creative in developing the computer, and you're allowing the creativity you're doing through creating a level of chaos, and then you're allowing that level of chaos to fluctuate, right? And through that fluctuation, through that chaos, you can then give the computer, say, we're allowing you to write music, and then in order for you to compose, we're going to give you the ability to cause a little bit of chaos here, and then we're going to see different levels of chaos that you do, and we're going to give you the structure of music, what has to be done, and within those little levels of chaos, we'll pick out parts of that chaos which fill structure, and that will be your creativity. Right? But I don't think man, that's simulating creativity. That's not real creativity. What that's doing is, you're allowing chaos, and then you're giving rules to choose with that chaos. Man doesn't write music that way. Man writes music because he comes up with an idea. Right? It's not chaos. You understand what I'm saying? There's a difference. There's a creative, formulative element of man. What you're saying is, let there be chaos and choose from the chaos something which is creative. Something which is, no, which has form. Yeah? But he wouldn't come up with a new concept of form. Because you've only programmed into him a certain amount of form. So the forms that's considered musically okay is fine. But if someone were to develop a new form of music, right? I mean, after Beethoven, then there was rock. Rock sounds like chaos. That's a new form of music. You understand? Or someone came up with, I don't know what other forms of music are. Folk. American folk. Or the blacks. Jazz, or what is these guys do now? The raps. That's a new form of, right? A computer wouldn't come up with those sort of things. That's man's creativity. You could, in theory, program him to compose a certain type of music, like a Beethoven type of music, or classical music, and give him all the forms for classical music, and he would write a good composition, but he wouldn't create a new form of music. That's the difference. You understand? Okay, so how do we get onto that? So, if that's what defines man differently from an animal, that you identify. The more a man has of that, the more he's manly. Correct? The more he's less than an animal. The less man has of that, the more he's animalistic.
But you're saying like the less he... like express das, or less he has das?
The less he has das, the more he has. But I explained to you what das is. Now I'm going to use the word. You understand what das is?
Das as being
the creative ability of man to express himself against obstacles in the world, or to be creative stump, without obstacles, right? And creative in the way that we define, not creative through this randomness. Creative in new form.
It's the mental equivalent to procreation, right?
Yeah. Man was created to procreate. You understand what I'm saying? Makes sense to you? Makes sense to you? Well, that's too much of an assumption I made.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Makes sense, okay. So if we're going to give cover to man, gives means of giving weight. We have to give weight to man in those things, right? Which define man, we identify as being manly. You understand what I'm saying? So it means real covered is to someone who has das. The more man's expressive of his das, I'm using the word because I can't go, you understand what I mean by das? The more man's expressive of his das, the more covered he has. Yeah.
So your definition seems to be very different from like what we usually take it to be. So usually I think of honor as something that requires other people. So it sounds like honor is something that an individual could be completely isolated, right, and by himself just has honor. And usually I think of honor as something that is based on how other people see them.
That's not a Jewish concept. The Jewish concept of honor is not the honor that other people give you. The Jewish concept of honor is to give weight to yourself. Honor is something that you give to yourself.
What about honoring your parents? Is that the same
word? Yeah. It's the same word. What happens here is, someone who has honor, we have or a mitzvah or a requirement to honor them. And the reason for that is, because if this person has real honor, by us respecting them or giving weight to them, we're also giving weight to something which we hold of as real honor. If I give respect to a big footballer, in a certain sense, or if I was to buy a footballer for $10 million, I'm giving honor to that concept. I'm not saying it's wrong, I'm just explaining to you that that's what you're effectively doing.
So is honor somewhat like synonymous to like just giving weight, like or like what?
Identifying, giving weight to that aspect of you, and all that aspect that exists in other people. It means if I see a person, and you'll find, I'm not talking about the masses, right? The masses might give honor to things which aren't really honorable. You know, they might have this fantastic rock and roll guy, right? Who's a terrible person, right? Who just, but he's wild and he does all sorts of crazy things. And the masses want his signature and all sorts of stuff like that. But no one really believes, no one who's really thinking or really thinks about it would actually think of this person as honorable. No one will, let's say, if this person was this crazy guy, right? And the other said, and a nice Jewish mother, and she has a daughter, and this guy proposes, don't think she'd be too keen on it. You understand what I'm saying?
But what if he puts honor on like wildness? So that would make it what he puts honor on, but it doesn't make it valuable, right?
No, because what we in the world put honor on, right? It gives value to it. It makes it a valuable concept. So if people in the world put value to wildness, it makes wildness a valuable concept. Someone told me, I haven't seen this program, but someone told me in America there's a program called Women Gone Wild or something. Girls Gone Wild, right. They
there's
give...
Guys gone wild too.
Oh, there's guys gone wild? Oh, yeah, I'm sure there'll be.
I haven't.
I wasn't aware.
Okay. No, I wasn't aware of either, but basically, if you understand what's happening there, it's, people give honor or give, to things which are more animal in you. So basically the world became more animalistic. You understand? If you give honor or if you give weight to your physical aspect of you, that's making man not honorable. Have you ever seen a president of the United States stand up there with his shorts on and say, I want to give a speech to you guys? You ever saw that? I mean, it might be in the future. The presidents go wild. The Senate go wild, right? Who knows, I'm sure that would be a big one if they caught the president of the United States went wild, right?
It's not that big of a news nowadays.
Maybe not.
It's happened before. There are examples of
presidents. There are senators who are gone wild.
There are senators who are probably being wild right now, for that matter. And there's no.
Something interesting? The highest paid state official in New Jersey is the football coach of the Rutgers football team.
Way.
Not even a government official. He's a coach.
In Maryland, it's a basketball coach at University of Maryland. That's the highest paid state employee.
Okay.
Pretty much. It's not even honor to law. It's to the football coach.
Okay. So you see, the arachim, the weight you give to things in the Western world is very different to how we should really weight man. Man, if you define, I mean, if we're thinking about defining something, like you were saying, it's a good concept, identifying with man, right? You're going to put man into his category. So man's defined from his intellect, from his ability to be creative. If you want to talk about artificial intelligence, right? We want to define man different from a computer. So his ability to create new forms or new ideas. That's what man's real weight is. Listen, let's be honest. In 10 years' time, I mean, anyone remembers 10 years ago the best footballer, the best, you know? But we all remember 100 years, 1,000 years ago, we all remember Aristotle, you know, even in the Western world, you know? The people of intellect, their weight is for longer. And even in their times, they weren't considered so important, but their effect in society was much greater. If someone came up with the first computer program or the first computer, he had weight. You understand? And I'm not saying how we should weight things, but obviously the weight of man has to be something to do with his das.
Like physical, like kings and stuff who weren't the smartest people, but they had a lot of wealth and they're remembered.
For example?
Remembered and respected?
King Henry
the Eighth. Yeah. Okay. Right. Yeah.
He's
okay. This
he's more infamous than he is.
Respect. I thought it'd been a respectful way.
Michael Phelps.
Who's Michael Phelps?
Michael Phelps was a swimmer who broke the record for the most Olympic gold medals.
He's not
going
to be
remembered.
Yeah,
like eight gold medals.
I was actually
Wayne
Gretzky.
Actually,
Smith.
What?
Yeah, Mark Smith. He has a figure in the wax museum and being commemorated.
Okay, great, and he's still an active swimmer. So you know, in 50 years down the line, we'll see where that wax.
I'm not saying, and even if they are, let's be honest. You know, the world basically nowadays remembers a lot of people who shouldn't, in terms of our terminology, should be remembered. Remember, we're describing man. We're describing COVID as giving weight to something. So if you were defining man in terms of giving weight to something which is manly, so those things aren't manly, you know. I'm sure a dolphin can swim faster than Mark Spitz, right?
No question.
Yeah.
No, I'm just kidding.
Right? You understand what I'm saying? Mark Spitz against the dolphin. I don't think I got much of a chance. Okay.
In a long term, not in a long race.
What are you talking about, dolphin?
Like I'm saying, that Marcus would have even less of a chance.
Oh yeah, in a long race,
crossing,
yeah.
Crossing the
Atlantic Ocean, right? Whatever. Okay, right. I understand what we're talking about. So you know, that's not something specific about man. Okay, so now that we understand what defines man and what's special about man, so we're now beginning to understand what is covered. You understand what covered is? So if you want to give covered to someone, right? You were saying before, first you have to give covered to yourself. How do you give covered to yourself?
Increase das.
Yeah.
Give weight to the...
Give weight to what you really are. If you give weight to what you really are, then how do you give weight to something which you really are?
How do you know what you really are, though?
Okay, I'm not saying it's easy, it's very hard, but it can be done.
It's your intellect.
Wait, first of all, we're talking about man. We know man has to give weight to his das. What's specifically creative about you? You might be a poet, you might be a computer programmer, you might be anthropologist, you might be, I don't know, might be all sorts of things, a literature writer, a mathematician, a physicist, a Torah scholar, right? All these different things you might be. You have to give weight to your creativity, what you're specifically creative. So in order to give weight to something, what is the first thing you have to know, which is your question? Who you are. You have to understand who you are. So covered can't start before you know who you are. So now, to know who you are, you first of all know that you're different from a dolphin, different from an animal. That's the first thing. So you have to give weight to that aspect of you which is different. Giving weight to something means spending time on it.
What do you mean on give weight to that aspect of you that's different? Different in like
Other animals, right. General man as a rule. Now you specifically, why are you different from your friend? What makes you different? What aspects of you are different? What is your creative abilities? Could be social abilities, could be intellectual abilities, it could be all sorts of different abilities that you have. You have to notice them. You have to be finely in touch with them. Right? And when you do that, right, then you'll know what to give weight to. First of all, you should be spending time on understanding yourself, spending time on the intellectual aspect of yourself, or emotional aspect, emotional intellectual aspect of yourself. You understand what I'm saying?
How about somebody who's like a social worker? They're not the smartest person, you know, they never did that well in school, they don't think creatively that much on their own, but they always try and, you know, they do a lot of charity things, they try and help out other people, they work in a nursing home.
Your definition of intelligence, I mean, you guys know the book, it's what's called emotional intelligence, EQ, and IQ. A social worker might not have a high IQ, but they might have a high EQ, because they might see different situations and be creative in solving this person's drug addiction, this person's smoking addiction, this person's...
I've been taught, you know, I wanted...
I'm talking about a good social worker, not a bad one.
Yeah, just like somebody who, like, goes around helping old people across the street, feeds them their food, you know.
He still has to be adept in terms of, you know, in his creativity. You'll find that people, no one has to be, I'm not telling you that the best human being is this intellect. And people who don't have an intellect aren't so good. Because, you know, Judaism's not, we don't say he's the most important or he's not the most important. The only thing, I mean, in Judaism that makes a person important, yeah? When I say das, means the ability to express himself in a giving way to other people. Whatever that aspect of him is, that's really about being a tzaddik, about being a righteous person. Being a righteous person means fully expressing yourself in a creative way and giving way to others. The Torah that we are given enables us to get that ability. That's why we study Torah. We study Torah in order to achieve that ability and to understand ourselves, to reach that. That's why we also study Gemara. We understand, study Gemara. We use our intellect to try and fine-tune on ourselves. You understand what I'm saying? It's too abstract what I'm saying. I'm going to go into more particulars.
I just have a question. So what about for someone who's like not intellectually as smart, or even if emotionally not smart, then where's
he'll take people across the street, he'll help them out, he'll do whatever he does. That's his portion.
Perhaps like the word creativity is what. So when I think of creativity, I think of, you know, being kind of what you were saying before, that humans are able to come up with something, a new form of something.
Yeah.
That's what I think of in creativity.
But creativity could be...
capable of coming up with a new form or a new...
So creativity could be in their individual lives, how they relate to their children. You see many people who are very simple people and have wonderfully great children. Because they're nice people, they're pleasant, they're simple people. Sometimes, you know, our own parents, right? They could be simple, you know, down, run-the-mill children. They have a very, very special child. They train them well. They give them right attitudes to life. They were important for them, their education. The priorities were right. And they created great children. And you have intellectual people whose children are all mucked up. They're all by the psychologist, right? Creativity doesn't have to be an intellectual creativity. It can be whatever your creativity is in life. It's not, if you're the greatest intellect, but you're a terrible person, I wouldn't say that was a successful life. I told you creativity in the way of Chazal, but Chazal is very specific about its creativity. The rabbis, the Torah, is very specific about its creativity. It's a creativity where you give life. to other people? Will you help other people? I don't know if the most important thing in life is to create a great computer program. Maybe the most important thing in life is to have good children. How do you know what's the most important thing in life? You know, there's a very simple way of learning it. What do people write on their tombstones?
What they remember.
Son, daughter, wife, husband.
Even if you took the greatest computer programmer, I don't even know what's written on Einstein's tombstone. I don't know what's written there. But you really think it's written there, he was the founder, I don't know, maybe it is, I don't know who wrote it, he was the founder of special and general relativity and Brownian motion. Do you see that's written on his tombstone?
On the other hand, all animals have children, only humans, the intellectual people.
The teaching of the children. Animals teach their children, they feed them, they get bigger, and then they go off.
Animals teach their children, it's just they teach their children.
Till 18 years old? And they go to college afterwards? Maybe the cats. But it's only the ones who have them, only the human beings who have them.
No,
it's cat school. I was once on a plane. I thought it was so ridiculous. I was once on a plane, you know, you see these films on a plane.
So
I've forgotten the film of the plane. It was a very boring film. It was about how these children took all the dogs and cats in New York, it probably was, I don't even know where, in America, somewhere in America, and they captured them from the city, and they made a private hotel for the cats and dogs. And so these cats and dogs were, you know, going through manicures, have their own, like, bouquet, and, like, sending flowers, and of course you get a love story of two poodles or something like that, right? You know? Like, give me a break. You know what I'm saying? Like, give me a break.
Could creativity be defined as, like, general problem solving?
Yes.
It sounds like that was a theme that was coming up, just like...
Yeah, general, but problem solving, not dafka an intellectual problem solving. Problem solving in life. Life has full of its problems.
Yeah.
What is this, right?
It could be like how to create a new program, like in a computer program. It could even be like in the example of someone crossing a street, like, okay, how do I get this person across the street safely?
Yeah.
And you have to come up
and keep them happy.
You have to come up with some sort of creative solution to get them across the street,
yeah.
You know, avoid cars, people,
yeah.
UFOs, whatever the obstacle is.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
But you understand what we're talking about? You understand? I hope you understand what I'm talking about, yeah? So that's the way we have to be creative, right? So, and giving way to that creativity is what honor is about. Now I'm going to finish off with the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Ezehu Mechubad. Who's an honorable person? Hamechabed et Abriyah. Someone who honors other people.
Mishnah
Pagios. Ezehu Mechubad. Who's an honorable person? Someone who honors other people. What does it mean? You're honorable if you honor other people. We said before, honor has nothing to do with other people. Remember? Here the Mishnah says, who is honorable? That one who honors other people.
So that just means that person puts weight, values as important other people.
Yeah, who gives, no, he gives honor to other people, he gives weight to other people.
Couldn't it also mean that he helps other people increase the own weight that they give themselves?
Oh, okay. If I was to honor you, how do I honor you? If I was to honor you by saying, wow, that's a great hairstyle you have. That's a wonderful nose you've got there.
And what big teeth.
Oh, I love those earrings you have on your ear. Oh, that's a great one. The one you put on your cheek. That's really good on you.
That's honoring the physical.
Okay, but that's honoring you?
No.
Whereas if I say, wow, you're such a kind person.
Only if it's true.
Yeah, I'm saying if it's true. You're such a interesting person. You have such deep ideas. Wow, you're so sensitive to small things. You're so giving. What happens when a person does that? Why does a person do that? Because if you have the right weight that you give to yourself, or your right attitude to life, and you know what has weight and what has proper weight, you will automatically give weight to those things when you see them in others. That's what makes you honorable. It really starts from self. You can do it with other people. You can try it out. If you start trying it out, now there's an exercise. I'm not saying you have to do exercise, but it's a very simple exercise. You can take a person and you can describe him with all those things you see really honorable in him, and give him weight in those things. You can describe yourself and give weight to those things you know about yourself or you like about yourself, those good aspects of self. It's important, write them down, a list of good aspects of self or things you know. It's sometimes hard for us to even know, do those things, like you were saying. But if you do that, automatically you'll give weight to those things in other people. And the opposite of weight of covet is to be mezalzel, to make something zol, cheap, or kill cool, to be mekalel, to curse something. This to give honor, and this to curse. Curse comes from the lotion of kal, light. When you make something light, unimportant, you don't give it weight, that's called to be mekalel it, to curse it. A person can curse other people by not giving them the proper weight. He can curse himself by not giving himself his proper weight. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Then it comes down to you being able to find that right proportion, that weight.
You know, yeah, okay, so that's a work. That's what we haven't discussed. That's a work. There's one more Mishnah. Mishnah says, Ein kovod ela Torah. Mishnah says, there's no kovod except for Torah. That means Torah is kovod. That's what Mishnah says. The Chachamim kovod yinchalu. They will inherit kovod. The wise will inherit kovod. Inheritance, yeah, that's Torah. That means the people who learn Torah. So, what a second. It says, there's no kovod apart from Torah. Torah is something that you work to get. And also we have to define what Torah means. And it says, the wise will inherit Torah. And then the Mishnah says, Chachomin chalu kovod, they'll inherit kovod. Inherit sounds like something you get automatically. Doesn't sound like something you work for. Right? So it doesn't make sense that you are kovod is something you get automatically, that it doesn't work for. So how does this Mishnah work? And what does the Mishnah say that ain't kovod ala Torah? What does Torah mean? Torah means, says Torah begoyim, the goyim have Torah, al tamin, don't believe. Chochma begoyim tamin, you believe. They have wisdom. But their wisdom is not connected to their self-expression in terms of their goodness, the expression of being good to other people. Using that wisdom to be creative in giving goodness to other people, that's Torah. A wise man inherits Torah. You know why he inherits? Because if a person works to be expressive and good, it's not, and he's wise, he's using himself in a wise way. It's Torah is something that you can't reach that level. It comes to you, it's a present, but you have to start it. Wise men get wisdom, the Gemara says. If you start being a wise man, what does it mean to be a wise man? Rabbeinu Yonah says, Ezu Chacham, who is a wise person? Halomed Mikol Adam. That's also Pirkei Avos, a person who learns from all men. Rabbeinu Yonah says, a Chacham is not someone who has wisdom. A Chacham is someone, a wise man is someone who wants truth, who seeks truth. That defines you as wise. So that means a person who seeks truth is a wise man, and he will inherit Torah, and he will inherit Kohen. So we're defining truth and the seeking of truth as what gives honor to a man. You understand what I'm saying? That's a very big statement. Who defines truth? How do you find truth in the world? So there's a Rambam. The Rambam says, the only thing that is true in the world is God's existence. And any other truth is in relation to that truth. So anything else which is truth is only in relation to God's truth. When we give weight to God's truth and we seek that truth, we're giving weight to ourselves. And that's seeking emes, that's seeking truth. You understand what I'm saying? And that's what we mean by das. When you express that truth of God's wisdom in the world. And that's Torah. Now you understand? That was very quick. A very quick statement. But that's really what it's all about. You understand what I'm saying? Makes sense to you? Okay.
So for Goyim,
it's the same thing.
Right. But would you still call it Torah?
Yeah, they could. If they keep their Torah, it's Torah. When the Gemara says the wisdom, it's not talking about the Goyim. They keep their Noahite laws. And also a Goy can come at you if he wants. We don't bring them in. We don't go on crusades or jihads, right? But they can come and they become Jewish. We don't stop them. We'll say, you know, it's better if you keep the seven Noahite laws. But if you want to come in, because afterwards it's harder. You can't get out. There's no entrance and there's no exit. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
they can have Torah if they want it.
So, but it's not for them when they are Goyim.
It's not for them, the Torah of a Jew, that they have Torah. The Goy can learn Torah. The Noahite laws, he can learn. It's also very detailed. Believe me, if you learn the Noahite laws, there's only seven of them, but there's a lot of details in them. More than most of the non-Jewish religions have. There's a lot of details. They have to have systems of justice. They have to have concepts of kashrus. They have to have not eating, you know, with raw meat or whatever like that, or shrimps and all these sorts of things. They have to have, you know, proper marital, you know, conduct. No serving of Avodah Zarah. Avodah Zarah is not such a simple thing that they don't serve idols. It doesn't mean they take a little, you know, metal staff that they bow. It doesn't mean that. It means the Jewish concept of what idols means. You understand what I'm saying? Christianity might be idol worship. You know, that nice little tree they have over there, right? You know, that's what, nowadays, minhag avoteinu b'yadein. Right? But there's all sorts of things that are not so simple. The ways of their fathers and their heads are not real Avodah Zarah. But that tree came from Avodah Zarah. They wanted to incorporate Christianity. Yeah, of course it did.
Germany.
They still have it. I don't know. It's nothing to do with the day. And the day, even people say, it was Pesach when he died. It wasn't, you know.
That's when he was born.
Or born.
No, they don't say he was born on.
I don't know when it was.
Either.
Okay.
But it's funny. New Year's coincides with Brit Milah.
Huh?
I always found that fun. New Year's? Like,
oh, the Brit Milah of him?
It's 8 days later.
maybe. I have no idea. Okay, good. Yeah. Maybe it's Bo Mahul, I don't know. Anyway, it doesn't matter. There's not enough Kamina for us. Right? You understand what we're talking about? You understand what we're talking about? Makes sense? So, that's how we give ourselves covered. The closer we come to the real MS, the more covered we are. The closer we can express that real MS, which is God's will, that's when we become more Mahubad. That's the purpose of life. And that's what it means when it says the world was created to express God's kavod. Because his kavod is his will and his emes. You understand? Clear? Okay. Next week, I don't know if you guys will be around next week. But,
okay. They might be up north.
They might be up north, okay.
See you next.